Thank you, Senator. I really appreciate the great introduction. Thank you for the warm welcome. It is indeed exciting to be here today. And we had a magnificent event last night, and I was just so proud to be a part of it. Thank you for the invitation to be with you. For the evening, that was wonderful to honor two great humanitarians. Senator Dole and Senator McGovern are well-deserved in the World Food Prize. It is important that we recognize them, not for their lifetime of service, but for the impact that they've had on people. And Senator McGovern, thank you for joining us today. It's an honor to be at your table, and we appreciate you being here. I also want to thank the past laureates for being with us. We appreciate you staying active with the organization. Because the work that you do didn't stop upon the delivery of the prize. Importantly, you have made a commitment to continue your efforts to help feed people. And we appreciate that so much. I really enjoy the young folks that are here today. Thank you for joining us. The Borlaug Fellows that are here as well, but the Youth Institute is exciting to see. I have some friends here from the Chicago High School for Agriculture and Science. The young folks here are the future of agriculture, and they're in the room, and they're learning from all of us who go before about how to make a commitment to agriculture, which I believe is the language of the world. I am truly honored to be here in Des Moines to give the breakfast remarks at the 2008 Borlaug Dialogue and World Food Prize. And by the way, if you're still eating, please do so. I know that some of you got a late start, but, enjoy your meals, toast your glasses, clank your silverware. And as a former governor, I was used to speaking to the legislature. I was really impressed last night with the recipients of the award, Senator McGovern and Senator Dole. These leaders share a common vision of what America's agriculture and the American people can do to relieve hunger here at home and certainly around the world. And they clearly saw the link of the bounty of the American farmers consistently, the bounty that American farmers consistently produce, and how that can impact the world. They saw how we can fill the needs of hungry children. In the 1970s, they did groundbreaking work to perform the federal food stamp program, to reform that and expand the domestic school lunch program, and they established the supplemental food program for women, infants, and children that we call WIC today. I had school lunch Wednesday in St. Louis with some children, second graders. And the teachers that were there talked about how when those students in a poor area had warm breakfast and a warm lunch, how they were more attentive in class, how they were more prepared to learn, how important it was for their education to have often the only two meals that some of those kids had in school, and the important work that was done here to help our people in the United States of America learn and grow and be educated is really important. And then in the 1990s, they looked far beyond our borders. They looked at the plight of some 300 million poor children around the world, and they sought to reach them with a global school feeding program modeled on the success of the school lunch program here in the U.S. That effort began 7 years ago as the Global Food for Education Initiative, and it quickly took off and now became the McGovern Dole School Feeding Program. That evolved into the program that supports education and child development and school security in low-income, food deficit countries that are committed to universal education. And there's more important things that come out of that school lunch program as well. Not too long ago, I was in California. I was having school lunch with some fourth graders, and one of the boys that was sitting across the table looked at me and he said, is it true that if you find a strawberry or two strawberries that have grown together, if you give it to a girl, she'll fall in love with you? I said, of course. So the language of agriculture is important, even in school lunch. But, you know, we heard a bunch of statistics last night, but some of them bear repeating. To date, the McGovern Dole program has provided meals to more than 22 million children in 41 countries. It boosted school attendance by 14%. And if you just calculate the women that we focused on last night and how important it is for them to get educated, it increased their participation in school by 17%. Just in the last 2 years, the program has fed 6 million people using nearly 190,000 tons of commodities. You know, these are top-line numbers, but let me give you a sense about how the program really works on the ground, how it touches people's lives. Zobeida Perez Garcia was a third grader in La Libertad School in Managua, Nicaragua, in 2005. Her school was participating in the McGovern Dole School Feeding Program. She wrote a letter to the Food for the Poor. The Food for the Poor is a private voluntary organization that are implementing the program for the United States Department of Agriculture. She says, I'm writing to thank you for the milk that you send to our school. There are eight of us in my family. My dad is a gate guard, and my mom sells tortillas. I drink the milk that you send us every day in my school. It's delicious. I feel better in class after I drink that milk. Thanks to each and every one of you. You know, we know there are millions of children around the world who are able to focus on their studies instead of their hunger because of this program. And we, and certainly they, are fortunate that George McGovern and Bob Dole both made agriculture-focused humanitarian causes part of their lives' work. And now the challenge falls to us. You know, it falls to me, and it falls to you to find new ways to help those who are still hungry every day out there in the world. We need to find that same compassion and dedication that these men displayed throughout their careers and move it forward. We must have the vision and the commitment to ensure long-term global food security for the world's poor and the world's hungry. We face the reality of a world population growing by 50 million people every year. And of course, we're not adding any new land in the world. So, you know, we need to figure out ways to feed these new mouths as we grow. And I believe the answer, once again, lies with building on the success of the American farmer. But rather than just the surplus commodities that we produce and we can ship around the world, our focus should be on sharing our technology, on sharing equipment and know-how and processes and procedures that made these surpluses possible. We must find ways to help farmers all over the world boost their productivity of their own land. And we must help them do what the American farmer has been doing successfully for decades here. Just in the last 15 years, our corn yields have increased from one average of 100 bushels per acre to 150 bushels per acre. 50% increase in yield in 15 years. With last year's corn crop and this year's forecast, the United States will have developed its two largest corn crops in history. And gains of this kind have allowed the United States producers to meet the rising demands of food and feed and fuel while maintaining record level exports and strong food aid donations. These gains are partly due to the new crop varieties that biotechnology revolution has given us. But other techniques, like precision farming and good fertilizer regimes, improved irrigation systems, and better water management have also played a strong part in this growth of productivity. In June, I had the privilege of leading the United States delegation to the Food and Agriculture Organization high-level conference on world food security in Rome. The aim of this conference was to help countries find sustainable solutions to rising food prices and to new challenges of climate change and energy security. The aim of the conference was to help countries find sustainable solutions to rising food prices and to new challenges as we see weather patterns change, and also to find energy security. The aim of the conference was presented by the United States in a three-part strategy to address these issues. And with the current food aid as a first part of the strategy that we are presenting to the world, along with that, a commitment over the next 2 years of how we will continue to send the dollars and the food abroad. But importantly, the third part, we also committed to helping other countries increase their crop yields so they will have the food and the fiber and the fuel supplies that their growing populations demand. There are many barriers to overcome. There are poor roads, lack of refrigeration, lack of storage capabilities, rising fertilizer costs, limited knowledge of good farming techniques, resistance to biotechnology, and other newer technologies, just to name a few. Long-standing issues of alleviating bottlenecks and promoting market-based principles in agriculture trade must also be addressed. To help countries move past these barriers, the United States committed $5 billion over the next 2 years to help countries develop their agriculture. And our effort is to work toward doubling the production of trade and supply of staple foods such as corn and wheat and cassava and sorghum and millet in 5 West African countries. To be effective, however, development assistance must focus not only on the immediate results, but on the medium and the long-term challenges of building capabilities for local crop production, for post-harvest management, and for trading of food products. Now, we know that new technologies and basic infrastructure improvements can make agriculture more resistant to climatic variability and to weather pattern change, but it can improve farm economies. I chaired a panel in Rome at the FAO about sustainability of agriculture, and especially the sub-Saharan African countries came to the microphone one at a time and talked about missing the Green Revolution. They couldn't take advantage of what Dr. Norman Borlaug created in this country because they didn't have the infrastructure to do it. And they said, now as we look at expanding food supply in the world, we need help. We don't want to miss it again. And we need to make sure that that infrastructure goes forward. We need to invest in scientists and research institutions. We need to invest in market information systems and distribution networks and storage facilities. We must improve water management and irrigation. We must provide access to rural credit and livelihood programs for farm families. And we must work together to widen the use of existing and new technologies with the potential to significantly boost yields for commodity products. In some countries, this might mean just adapting the most recent Green Revolution availability, the technologies that are available, such as hybrid varieties that, again, Dr. Norman Borlaug pioneered. In other countries with greater challenges and environment and climate issues, new biotechnology-based solutions should be considered. Today, we know that biotechnology is one of the most powerful tools that we have for boosting agricultural productivity and for building prosperity among the rural poor. And there are some encouraging signs that others see the same possibilities that we do. Some countries are empowering their farmers to produce biotechnology crops. Last year, the amount of land around the world devoted to biotech crops grew by 12% to over 280 million acres. Biotech crops were grown by more than 12 million farmers in 23 countries. About 10 million of those farmers were small and resource poor. They were in developing countries. And for the 2008 crop year, the United States has already exported $2.5 billion of coarse grains and oil seeds that were biotechnology driven to the European Union. I would encourage other countries to follow the lead of Burkina Faso in Africa, which recently decided to commercialize biotech corn, and Egypt, which is commercializing biotech varieties of corn. And they are both working on biotech cotton as well. And two other African nations have initiated biotech field trials for our food crops, South Africa for sorghum and Uganda for bananas. Food crops like these can improve human nutrition. They also increase economic activities and farmers' income. Biotechnology also offers us tools that can accelerate breeding and more accurately diagnose crop and livestock disease. This is especially helpful for economically important tropical crops, which traditionally have seen breeding be a prohibitively slow process. We've had positive experiences here in the United States with using biotech tools to boost yields and cut the use of herbicides and insecticides. They use less water. They work with different climate issues. And now we're the largest government donor supporting the development of biotechnology crops. But the United States just can't do this job alone. We need greater public investment by more diverse donors to provide equitable access to this technology. The United Nations agencies, the G8, the World Bank, the other international partners are critical resources to move these technologies forward and into everyday use, into helping people in need. In a developing country, more equitable access starts with establishing science-based regulations that can support the development of these technologies. Farmers also need to open markets for the crops that are produced through these technologies. Toward that end, we believe that countries should adopt enabling regulations that give the private sector incentives to develop these new technologies. They should also honor the WTO, the World Trade Organization, obligations to facilitate the free flow of trade, the flow of goods and services and food across borders to where people need them. They should support positions with international treaties like the Cartagena Protocol on biosafety. That encourages the development of new technologies. It protects biodiversity, and it really doesn't obstruct agriculture trade. It opens it up. The success of any long-term strategy to reduce hunger and malnutrition demands the free flow of food and technologies that produce it, and biotechnology is an important part of that. The sobering fact is that in 2007, an additional 75 million people were undernourished, according to the Food and Agriculture Organization of the UN. This brings the number of people hungry worldwide to 925 million folks. His Excellency Ban Ki-moon, the Secretary General of the United Nations, said food production needs to double by the year 2050. You know, the citizens of the United States are very proud to provide more than one half of all the food disaster relief around the country. We're proud of our record of leadership. We have a moral and ethical obligation to share our agriculture bounty with those who are less fortunate. But we can't do it alone. We need to develop crops and yields to charge economic prosperity in rural areas for the poor and for the hungry. At the same time, we must fix the underlying problems that focus on a long-term solution rather than just responding to the immediate needs of sending food. Hunger and malnutrition affect every aspect of an individual's life, from health to education, and from their ability to work and produce and to take care of their family. And without food security, Economics suffer, incomes remain low, and people fail to reach their potential of full and productive lives. Our goal can be nothing less than eliminating the specter of hunger once and for all. Ladies and gentlemen, we follow powerful, world-changing precedents. The work of Dr. Borlaug is just amazing. Senators Dole and McGovern, we follow you as well. We must continue to realize your visions, to honor the legacy by finding new ways to harness our agriculture productivity to feed a hungry world. And toward that end, in just a few minutes here, I'll be signing a memorandum of understanding with Ambassador Quinn. With this MOU, we're formalizing not only the relationship between the World Food Prize Foundation and the United States Department of Agriculture, but our shared commitment to science and research and providing a nutritious and sustainable food supply for the people the world over. And you know, we're going to sign this document, and there are words on the paper, and we'll ink them and put our signatures on there. But you know, it's a document, it's words. It doesn't matter unless we put it into action. And that's our call today. And I'm reminded, as I think about the call to action, how important agriculture is in this arena. I recently was visiting with the United States Department of Agriculture employees in Iraq and Afghanistan. We have provincial reconstruction teams there working in the agriculture arena in two very different countries. In Iraq, a country that was led by a despotic regime, and the agriculture infrastructure was neglected for 20 years. And in Afghanistan, where the agriculture infrastructure was never developed. And our teams are there, and they're helping people develop that infrastructure. They're working on water systems and farm-to-market roads. They're providing reliable sources of electricity for refrigeration and storage capacity for after-harvest programs. I was recently visiting with these teams via interactive video, and I talked to them about what's your relationship with the people. You're out there developing agriculture, and they talked about how they were working on processing facilities and storage facilities and how they were getting these, the productive capacity of the land in place. And I said, well, what about the people? You're there among them. And they talked about working shoulder to shoulder with the people in the agriculture arena. They talked about being hand in hand and trying to help people grow food for their families and for their neighborhoods and for their regions, and how important that work is. And I said, well, okay, but what about the personal relationships? They said, you know, we're invited into their homes. We sit with them at their meals. We play with their children. We go to their weddings and their funerals, and they have become our friends. And that is the language of agriculture. It is the friendship, the hand of friendship, that we can spread throughout this world. And I have no doubt that when you have peace in the home with people who are well-fed and warm and comfortable, when you have peace in the home, you have peace in the neighborhood, and peace in the neighborhood leads to peace in the city, and peace in the city certainly gives you peace in a country. And if we have peace in the countries through agriculture in this world today, I know that that language of agriculture will bring peace to the world. So thank you for all that you do. I really appreciate your efforts. We have a lot of work to do, and we're ready to go. So join with me to deliver agriculture and food and promise to the people of the world. Thank you.